I'm now walking up to the entrance of the Warner Textile Archive in Braintree, in through the original mill building, and now to enter into the amazing archive and its recording the hidden history of weaving.
I mean, I think this is what history is all about. Rolling your sleeves up, if you like, and getting, you know, getting in touch with those traces of the past.
Welcome to Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. I'm Martha Dixon. In this episode, we delve deep into history to uncover forgotten pieces of Britain's industrial and creative past. A history academics are now showing to the world and bringing back to life for today's traders.
These textiles that were made hundreds of years ago and right up until the 1960s are still relevant. And that's very exciting. And it means that this isn't just some museum. This is real.
We hear how this move to reveal lost heritage is getting global attention and causing quite a stir in London and LA.
So this is our Los Angeles showroom. We're located on La Cienega in the heart of the Design District in West Hollywood here. And the first thing you'll see upon entering is the Tree of Life from the Warner Textile Archive hanging on our back wall here.
I'm so excited because basically they are so authentic.
The noise would have been tremendous. There would have been the sounds would have, of the looms working.
Curator Robert Rose is taking us on a tour of a factory that changed the face of fashions through the ages.
The sounds of all the different processes involved of creating, weaving cloth.
This whole site in Braintree, Essex, is a tribute to the Warner and Sons Company. Starting in the late 1700s, the company made high-quality printed fabrics for furniture, clothes, and even luxury ocean liners, right up until 1971 when it closed. When weaving stopped, the last Warner descendant realised the national importance of the collection of fabrics and business documents housed in the factory and turned it into an internationally renowned archive. It now houses a vast collection of textiles, second only in the UK to the Victoria and Albert Museum. It also holds records of those who lived and worked here.
And the local people would have been delighted to be not only working but contributing to producing some of the finest fabrics from Essex and the whole country. We are now in part of the original mill buildings dating back to 1895, where they would have, the power weaving looms would have been clattering away, producing yards and yards of fabric. But it wasn't just power machines, there were also hand looms where the most skilled weavers would intricately be creating designs at only several inches of fabric a day.
Academics from the University of Essex are taking this incredible history and carefully digitising collections. They're also unearthing some forgotten pieces. These new stories are then brought to people around the globe. It means these historic prints and designs are now back in the world's eye, and designers are starting to use them again. This vital part of British history will now never be forgotten.
So the project's really helping us unlock the potential of the archives.
Sophie Gemma is in charge of this massive collection.
So there's so many more records that we haven't fully explored yet that will help us piece together different parts of the collection and really enliven the design history of elements of the archive.
So the Warner Textile Archive is so important because it records not only unique design history for furnishing fabrics in the United Kingdom, but also a testimony to the skill and the sweat and the toil of all those that work for the company day in, day out, at all the different stages of production, from preparing the yarn, from dyeing the yarn, from weaving the yarn, and then to distributing it throughout the country and throughout the world. The value of having the University of Essex working with us at the Water Textile Archive is that it brings expertise and rigour into the archive. Digital access will allow the archive to be used in ways that we probably can't imagine at the moment, and so that not only are we preserving the archive, but actually we are reimagining and reworking designs that were part of the original process of how the company worked. So we're really carrying on the tradition of Warner & Sons, but bringing it to life in the 21st century.
So hi, my name is Sam Woodward and I'm a postgraduate researcher with the University of Essex from the Department of History, and I've been working with the Warner Textile Archive. I think that the Warner Textile Archive needs to get more recognition, definitely on national if not global scale, because it is such an incredible collection to look at. It's got such variety in it, from dye books through to paper, point designs, and textile collections, business records. It's the whole package, and I think it would be good to get more audiences engaged with that. I think the most interesting design that I'd come across was the lunar rocket design, and it celebrates the lunar landing from 1969, and I really liked that the design captures a moment in history, and it kind of reflects how that memory is being brought forward and carried on. And it's just it's a really cool design that you don't really see necessarily on textiles. You tend to think of textiles being as quite heavily floral, but instead of lunar rockets going off the surface of the earth.
That quirky fabric that celebrates the landing on the moon is just one piece in this vast collection housed in Essex.
So it's really amazing for us to have been able to bring the collection back to its original home a few years ago. We're now going into our archive store, and this is where we keep the bulk of our collection. And we have lots and lots of planchets, so lots and lots of drawers which hold fabrics that date right back into the 1700s, as well as really tall shelving and roller racking, which is full of all of our really amazing fabrics. Here we've got three different designs that were created during World War II. So you can see that we've got the medallion design, which is a woven design, and then kind of a really bright yellow design, and then a floral copper roller printed fabric as well. And these are really important for us because it's a snapshot into life during the 1940s, during wartime Britain. And these fabrics were all what's known as utility scheme fabrics. And this meant that they had to go through a really rigorous committee process and adhere to lots of different regulations to make sure that we weren't wasting any fabric or creating frivolous designs during a real period of austerity during World War II. So the design called Medallion, which has got sort of spots and stripes on it, was created by a designer called Enid Marks, and she was kind of the leader on what designs should be created for the utility scheme. And she had a conversation in the 1970s with the then archivists at Warner & Sons, and kind of recorded lots of different bits of information about how the whole process worked.
In complete contrast to these utility designs, Warner made fabric for kings and queens over the centuries, all now carefully preserved for people to see and use again. Sophie says the fabrics tell a fascinating story of British society's ups and downs through the ages.
During George VI's coronation, this fabric would have decorated Westminster Abbey, and it's got a large stylized crown on it, and then the English roses oak leaves, and the background of it is made of cloth of gold, so it's got real gold thread going through it. So it's a really expensive piece of fabric to have been produced, and the actual design process was really, really elaborate to actually get it woven to the correct specifications. So it's really important piece of history to be kept as part of the history of the royal family.
Also housed here are all the business archives of the company. One very old, large brown book shows a special piece of Britain's industrial history.
This is one of the oldest objects we hold in the collection, and it's a ledger created by Anne Warner. And it's really special to us because not only is it a very early record, but it's actually a really early example of a woman being in a managerial position. So not only does it chart the commercial success of Warner's at this time and their growth, and an amazing record of a sort of a snapshot basically of the Industrial Revolution, how mass production and manufacturing were developing at the time. But it gives us a real insight into how things were working during that time. And Anne was really a unique example of a woman being in that kind of position. And you can even see from a lot of the records of the companies that they're selling the loom harnesses to, that it's all to companies that are so-and-so and sons. So she's really a woman in a man's world. She's really selling to all of the men in the industrial textile manufacturing area.
So my name's Alex Green. I'm a senior lecturer in history at the University of Essex. I mean, I think this is what history is all about. You know, history is a discipline about kind of making history, sharing history, making sense of the past, trying to make those connections. And I think we can only do that in conversation. You know, history has to always be collaborative for me. I think we just do more interesting history when we're working with other organisations, history that matters to them, history that makes use of, you know, their collections or their institutional memory. You know, textiles are in everyday lives as for us as consumers, but of course they were made by people, you know, they're products, they're manufactured. So it tells a story about design, about, you know, how people, you know, saw their environment and translated that into designs on fabric, but also the story of manufacturing, of people who, you know, had these, you know, skills in weaving, people who took those, you know, fabrics on the road and sold them and turned them into products. So it's a history of labour as well as a history of consumption, I think. So there's really no one, I suppose, whose lives are untouched by fabrics of one kind or another, whether as producers or as consumers, so, or on both indeed. So, you know, there's no aspect of social history, I suppose, that's untouched by the history of textiles.
Now the looms are working again. As this historic collection is relaunched on the world, designers are starting to use the old designs for new pieces.
We have taken an important bit of British textile history, and now we've spread it across America, and it seems to be going down very well.
Adam Sykes from Claremont Furnishings has used the Warner archive to create new fabrics with the historic designs. Here's a little introduction to his LA showroom.
So this is our Los Angeles showroom. We're located on La Cienega in the heart of the Design District in West Hollywood here. And the first thing you'll see upon entering is the Tree of Life from the Warner Textile Archive hanging on our back wall here. We love having it front and center so that designers can see the full scale of the pattern as it's pretty large. And this way you can see all the colors that are going throughout. I'll take you over to this shelf here where we have the full Warner Textile Archive collection displayed. We have our sampling folded on the shelf.
The Americans in particular are very interested in the history, British history anyway, but also in particular, those who work in my industry, interior design, are actually very keen, they're keen on knowing the provenance of textiles. So with a story like the Warner Textile Archive, it's very easy to do because it's the real thing. What it means for the archive is that these textiles that were made hundreds of years ago and right up until the 1960s crafts are still relevant. And that's very exciting. And it means that this isn't just some museum. This is real, and it just needs to be tapped. And that's what we're trying to do. It's exciting because it's a piece of British history, and it's so important that it becomes better known, better recognised, and more importantly than that, as a courtesy to all these designers going back 100 years, that their designs are reimagined and used, and not just in an archive.
So currently we're working with the Warner Textile Archive to create a new interiors collection, which has been amazingly exciting because we've got to go through the whole archive to have a look to see if there's any kind of pieces we wanted to work with. Obviously, there were so many pieces. But
Cassie Nicholas became famous through a BBC show that she ended up winning, Interior Design Masters.
10 aspiring designers are putting their lives on hold in search of a dream.
Yes, I am talented, and it's a great opportunity for me to showcase my talent.
To break into the competitive world of professional interior design.
Now she's an expert interior designer herself, launching a new range on the general public. It's centred on using the past to create the future through the Warner Archive.
This is pulling something out that may not have been seen, and that is really, really exciting. It could have been kind of lost in the archive, but actually the archive wants people to see it. That the point isn't that it's not there for everybody to see. It is and should be available for everyone, and I think this brings this into a new group of people that will see it. So that's really, really cool, because hopefully it will be in some shops. That's the plan, and people would want to buy it, and they would know a bit more about the archive and why it's there. And it's amazing to be part of that. With an archive, you kind of think about it being the past, but they're not. They're always creating things for the future too, so we get to be a part of that archive, which it just makes me so excited to be able to be part of history in that kind of way, really.
This was Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. This episode was all about how academics are bringing history to life through the incredible Warner Archive. Thanks for listening. You can find all our podcasts, as well as more information about contributors and subjects, on our Centre for Public and Policy Engagement site at the University of Essex.